Welcome to the Her Story podcast, Son Histoire à Elle. I'm your host, Kathleen Stavert. Son Histoire à Elle est un balado bilingue qui met en valeur non seulement le succès des femmes du Québec, mais qui souligne leur pratique et leur vie de tous les jours. I'll be talking with creative, successful, and game-changing women who are inspiring and relatable in the ordinary and extraordinary lives they lead. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Her Story podcast. I know that there's a plethora of, or is it plethora? I don't know. There's a lot of podcasts out there that you could be listening to. And so I'm just so grateful that you chose this one. And in this episode, I invited my dear friend Benita Bailey up to the mic, and she stepped up brilliantly. Benita is an actor in theater, film, and TV, and also the creator and host of a new show called Yell It that's gaining momentum across Canada and Germany. I was so delighted to be able to have her on the show, nestled in between trips to Germany and mothering her two young children. We talked relationships, the reality of parenting, trying to juggle it all, but one of my favorite topics at the moment was about the healing nature of diverse representation, and not just on screen, but across the board. I think you're going to fall in love with Benita's groundedness in this one and be just completely and utterly astonished and inspired by everything she's doing and working for and towards. Ladies and gentlemen, Benita Bailey. Hi, Benita Bailey.
Hi. Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
Oh, I'm so happy to have you. And I want to start by asking you, so this is a question that I've been asking all of my guests, because I think it's important to find out these days, especially these days, what's getting you out of bed in the morning?
What's definitely getting me out of bed are my children. Especially my two-year-old, he comes to my bed and takes my hand, and then he says "ka," which means come, and so he just says "ka, ka," and it's so endearing. I cannot not get up.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah,
does he ever crawl into bed between the two of you and cuddle with you?
Nope, never.
Get up.
Yeah. I don't know why, but somehow I created these super in energy balls, and both of my children always have been like, "Come on, mommy, it's time to get up. Let's do something exciting." And I'm like, "Okay, good morning to you too." So, yeah, no cuddling time in the morning. It's just like, come on, the day is here. I want to get going. I want to eat something. I want to do something. I want to get out. So, yeah, that's definitely.
Mm-hmm. What time are they at?
So my son is going to school, the older one, further away. So he has to get up really early. But luckily, my husband is taking him to school every morning. Yeah. So I'm kind of not really involved in that part. Like I am, but I'm not. Mm-hmm. I can kind of half get up or sometimes not get up because I work really late every night because I work when my kids are in bed too. And so the little one comes around 8, which is a good time, I guess, to get up. Sometimes,
that's a good time. Yeah.
Sometimes it's 7:30. Sometimes it's 8:30. It's around there.
And then what's your, okay, this might seem like a little bit of a sort of trite, banal question, but I am really fascinated in people's routines, especially in the morning, because, you know, and I've mentioned this several times on the podcast. One of the reasons why I started it is that because I'm a little bit of a voyeur, right? Or I'm a fan of figuring out how to do this life thing. And I'm a fan of seeing how other women do it, especially women with children, right? Because I have a
4-year-old part-time. And so I am very curious as to, like, knowing the life hacks, especially in the morning, because the morning is such a charged time.
Yeah.
So what's your morning routine? And if you have any life hacks to share, by all means, this is your platform.
I think in life with kids, routine is so important. I think kids work so well with routine, and that helps me to get my work done. So if my schedule is totally shifting all the time, it affects them. So I'm trying to have certain things every day the same, so my kind of crazy scheduling can, like, come in to that somehow. So the morning and the night routines are pretty set every single day.
Yeah.
So in the morning, as I said, so my husband takes care of the older son and takes him to school. And I take care of the younger son. That means he wakes me up most of the time. And then I'll get him ready. I get him dressed. He gets a little snack in the morning and milk and whatever not. And then I take him to daycare. So that takes me out of the house right away. Obviously, I have to get dressed too and all. And most of the time I don't have the cup of coffee then. I just get him ready, and it's all about getting him out of the house. And then actually once he's in the daycare, which is, as I said, different. It could be already 8:30. It could be 9, but the latest is 9:30. So my day starts at 10. I'm never scheduling any meetings before 10.
Mm-hmm.
If I have a shooting day or something where, as you know, the set times are very early, then on that day, my husband has to take both kids because obviously I can't, but we're trying everything to keep the routine.
Yeah.
So that's the morning. And then after I dropped him off at the daycare, I am just like, I have my cup of coffee, and that's my sacred opening time of the day. Yeah, totally. Sacred time. And then I'm trying to avoid waking up with my phone. That's a huge thing because it's my work tool. So the trick is to not plug it in the bedroom, but plug it in somewhere else overnight. So it's not the first thing you see when you wake up. And that is like a hard lesson, like, to ban the phone out of the bedroom is like really, really huge self-care step. And so with my first cup of coffee, I'm checking my emails, I'm reading my messages. I start the day like that. I would love to say I have this meditation or yoga practice in the morning, but even when I did my yoga teacher training, I realized I'm not the sun salutation meditation person in the morning. It's just not me. I do it when I teach in the morning, or right now I took a break from teaching yoga, but when I used to teach in the mornings, that was different, and that helped in a different way. But my practice is more like an afternoon evening type.
Like whenever you can fit it in.
Exactly. But like, I realized that this morning thing, if I'm on a retreat and we're all waking up with the sun, that works well. This is powerful. But in my normal daily life, that's just not me. I came to terms with that.
Yeah.
So that's basically my morning. And then the days are, as you know, we both are artists, so different every day. Sometimes it's just home office, catching up on writing invoices and doing all this paperwork and doing, you know, chatting with the agent or whatever not, and planning and organizing. And sometimes it's like doing podcasts or giving interviews or shooting or rehearsals or whatever. And then the evening routine is actually picking up the kids. I pick up the younger son, and Zeb picks up the older one from school. And then basically they come home and we have like about 1 or 2 hours of playtime, reading time, doing something together. And then it's dinner and bath time, and then they go to bed. That's what the week looks like. There's not much time we spend together during the week. And then in the weekend, we're trying to get to nature. We do something more exciting. We spend, actually this year specifically, I wrote it down on my vision board, which I always do at the beginning of a year, that I want to go more into nature. And then with the pandemic, that was just amplified in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really, I totally resonate with the whole routine thing. When you have kids, I've come to find it very grounding.
Exactly.
Like you say, we both kind of have these weird, off the charts, sometimes super busy, always different schedules. And then when you can come home and know that there's a reliable schedule and people, small children relying on you, it is a sense of responsibility, but it is also very, like, I find it very grounding. And I'm wondering, like, within that, so I've always admired you and your husband with how you juggle these just like insane, crazy lives that are never the same. And you always take the opportunity to go off to Germany and work on a show, or, you know, you've recently moved to Toronto and you come back to Montreal to work on a show. And that means, you know, giving the family responsibilities over to your husband. And I'm just wondering, so what's your moral code or what's your values for this? Do you follow any? Is this a conversation that both of you have had to have? Or is it something that's just always been ingrained in your relationship or even within yourself?
I think, yes, we do. And I will tell you what it is in a minute. I just would love to say that it's not easy, and it's definitely juggling a lot of things, and it means sacrifice on both of our parts. And I just think it's important to say that, because it happens quite frequently that people think that we're doing well, and maybe we are. I don't want to say we are not, or it looks seamless, but yeah, it needs a lot of planning. It needs a lot of conversation. Sometimes it is frustrating. Sometimes, there are situations when I go off on a job and I'm really happy about the job, but I'm also crying because it means I won't see my family in a while. Mm-hmm. And so there's also that in the whole, in everything, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's always important to see, because I feel like sometimes we're all wanted, I also wanted the easy way, you know, but there is no easy way. There's like only a way through it. And if you decide to have a partner and then a family, and you choose your career as well to have a certain part in your life, a bigger part, a priority, then that comes with struggle. So I just wanted to make that clear. But yes, I think really early on in our relationship, and even when we got married, we vowed to us to each other that we will always support each other in our growth. And that means it's not always linear. It means that sometimes his growth means me to wait, or it means for me to not go as fast, and the same time, and the same for him. And it means also that we're sometimes growing apart. Mm-hmm. That's part of it too. And I think it's a little bit about the code of conduct is wishing the best for each other. Mm. And wishing the best for each other means sometimes that the best for him is in this very moment, maybe not the best for me, or it doesn't feel like it's the best for me, but the faith and the belief that the best for him, because I love him, will always also be the best for me, is the one that pushes me in those moments or helps me. And I hope it goes the same way for him. So my husband is doing his doctorate right now at U of T. And that's the reason why we moved here. And that is a sacrifice on my part, because I just started building up something in Montreal. We lived there for 4 years after I started my career in Germany. So I'm constantly like starting something new, building a community. And then when it starts going really well, I'm like, Violet, that's too easy. Let's go to another place and start from scratch. So that's how it feels to me. But then for him, he has to focus on his studies. He has several jobs. And I'm focusing on my career too. I'm not just, and just is not meant in a bad way, focusing on the kids. And so therefore, when I'm traveling, on top of everything he's doing, he also is a single dad. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely not easy, but that's how we both have to sacrifice. Like, I still have to do my job and want to do my job to be fulfilled. And then a lot is on his shoulders. And then when I'm here and I have more job opportunities in Montreal or in Germany, some of them I can't take sometimes. If it's just a really small part, like a one-day role, sometimes it's not worth it for me, obviously, to travel half the world, and I have to say no to it. And that's my sacrifice, or one of my sacrifices. And so those are the things that are happening, and that's how one would say, maybe from an outside perspective, he is doing his degree not as fast as he could be if he would be single. And I would be faster if I would stay at one place and really build something up and focus on one thing. But together, I think we are stronger, and we obviously have the love, and we have a family, which, exactly what you said, is very grounding. I think actors are really interesting beings, like, in a way that, at least for me, I'm like interested in everything, right? And it distracts me easily, because I'm like, oh yes, podcast, this is amazing. And then, oh, do you want to whatever, moderate this panel? Yes, I love moderating this panel. What a great, you know, like, and my agent said something interesting last week. She said, that's why you have agents, because if you wouldn't have agents, you would just say yes to everything and play everything that has been offered to you. And I thought, that is true, because all I want is play.
And, yeah, well, I think it's also out of interest for sure, but also out of necessity. Like, and especially like as women, what we've been modeled is this idea of striving to have it and do it all. And so, yes, there's a lot of interest, and we want to live all the experiences so that we can better understand and be able to portray that in our art. But there is also the necessity to do all the things so that we can, like you said, we can feel fulfilled and complete. And that's a big responsibility sometimes.
Absolutely. But there are women who feel completely fulfilled with taking care of the children. And I respect that. And I think it's a huge task to do that. And it doesn't matter if it's one or 10 children, right? But for me, and I feel like I got a little taste of that this year when I was homeschooling and home toddlering my children during the pandemic. And I just realized how draining that was for both of us, because our careers were like a little on hold, but not really. And doing it all is like just what? It's just way too much. So yeah, I just did what you just said about womanhood is, it's a huge part, you know. I feel like we as women, we're still fighting certain pictures that are internalized and have been passed on for generations about what we as women can and cannot do. Mm-hmm. And it needs a lot of self talk and self-affirmation to correct that narrative.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just want to go back to what you said about the sort of rules by which you live. And it was really great. That really resonated with me. It was a really great reminder when you said that in a partnership, juggling two kids and careers and taking care of yourselves and you know, individually feeling fulfilled, that you start with the rule that you both wish the best for each other. And I think, I just want to thank you for that, because I think that it can get lost, right? Either the other person can get lost in our view, or we can get lost. And if we're wishing the best for each other, like you said, sometimes that means that in this moment, we're sort of drifting apart. But if the love and the foundation are there, we will come back together and we will find ourselves again.
Precisely.
I think I needed to hear that today. Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. I want to go into your own, your own history and your own her story. Don't mind if I do, but your own past, which, and again, this is like from an outside perception and from what you've told me, it seems like you said, you've jumped from place to place. It seems like a bit of a zigzag, from, working at the UN to becoming an actor. And I want to know if you sort of, I want you to go in a little bit into your own history, but I want to also ask you if you feel like, was that a through line, like your whole history, was that a through line to where you are now? Or do you see it as like tangents and branches off a tree where you went one way and then whoop, you went this way and then you moved that and, you moved to that country, a bunch of puzzle pieces put together? Or does it feel like a clear line to you?
I think at this part, or at this point in my life, I think it's all slowly coming together. When I look back, first of all, I have to say, I don't believe in coincidences. Mm-hmm. So I think that, of course, I don't have all the answers why certain things happened when, but I got into politics and African studies, which I studied first. I also stumbled into that, if you so want. So I was always this curious kid, loved learning, loved finding out new things, trying out new things for me. And I see that in my son now as well. It's so interesting, mm-hmm. with children, that it's so hard to decide on one sport. I found that's cruel. I want to try it all out, and also the whatever. Even then, when you decide on one sport, there's also so many possibilities to go into. And it was like that for everything in my life. I was like, why do I have to make this decision? I want to try everything. And so acting was something I wanted to do early in my life, because there I can try out everything. Mm-hmm. But my parents, so I come from a working class / immigrant background, and obviously the narrative, or that what they want for you, is that you have a better education, that you can be even better off financially, but also just secure. They just wish for security in your life. And so my parents weren't really excited about the idea of becoming an artist, and I think tried their best to avoid that. And it takes a while to emancipate. Is that a word? Emancipate?
Yeah.
Good. It takes it takes a while to emancipate from your own family, especially if you know they invested in you financially, made sure you have a great education. They had their own sacrifices and worked hard. So you just want to make sure they're proud of you. You want to make sure that they're happy with what you do. So I went to university partially because I felt like I owe it to my parents, but also I think that whole immigrant thing of once you go to university, you have a paper in your hand and you are somebody and you're not, you know, they can't look down on you anymore, mm-hmm. that kind of understanding. And then I'm a kind of person who's at least trying to finish something what she's starting. But also it was interesting. As I said, I'm interested in almost everything. So I found it really interesting digging deeper into, I focused on African politics and that has to do with my heritage. And I went to Africa, I worked in NGOs and that did something to me and my identity, of course. And
was a university in Germany, yeah?
Yes. So I'm German. So I was born and raised in Germany. And so I went to Leipzig University and I studied there. And I, every chance I got, I went overseas to work. Like I always connected to a work or to a job, an internship, a program. I hardly ever worked on the side and took the money and just went for holidays. I don't know why. I think that's also maybe, I don't know if it's an immigrant thing, but I just felt like there needs to be another purpose than just being there, which is good in a lot of ways, but also a bit weird in some ways, you know, like the whole question of just being and being enough and all that thing. When it comes to where I am now, I often say I'm still the same person. So I ended up working for the German government in the Human Rights Committee for an MP. I was the researcher. I was writing his speeches. I was preparing roundtables. I was doing all the research on African politics and the intersection to human rights.
Wow.
And it was super exciting, but I also was teaching dance to underprivileged kids on the side, you know, like those kind of things never left me. Like I never went one route and was this serious politician and or researcher or scientist or whatever. Wherever I was, there was also this other part in me where I was doing some social work, you know, either camps on my holidays. I took I did youth camps, or I would teach on the side. I did it also during my university time. And so I think what I always found a little bit crazy, if you get stuck in a bubble, and the intellectual bubble is really scary if you so want, because you have your own language. It's like a coded language.
Mm-hmm.
You read certain books that a lot of people wouldn't even understand, like me from a working class background. I literally, in my master program, I had to sit from 9 o'clock in the morning till 10 p.m. in the library to figure out everything I'm reading, because we had to read several thousand pages a week. And I was like, I don't even understand. My master's program was also in English. So I was like, I don't understand most of these words. I've never heard them in my life before. And if you come, you know, that wasn't a norm. Usually the people who do their master's around that time, and that's not even that long ago, their parents were professors. You know, they are used already to that language. For me, it was a new world. So I first took a lot of time understanding the texts before I could actually use them and do something with them.
Mm-hmm.
So all that to say that obviously helped me also with all the work. Now, look at me now. I'm acting mostly in my second language right now,
yeah.
Which I never thought I would. Because the most of my life, I was trying to prove myself as this super German actress who can speak German better than the Germans. And now here I am doing the same in English, because I live in an English-speaking country now. And you can hear my accent. Everyone can hear it. So now I'm trying to, I don't want to say erase my accent, but I have to minimize my German accent now in order to get certain roles for the American audience. It's all twisted. But I think certain things in my biography served me to be where I am right now. And then again, when I say I'm the same person, I think since, I don't even know if I can point a certain time in my life, but watching my mother as a Black woman growing up in a majority white culture and surrounding, how she's been treated, how I have been treated, that taught me so much about injustice. And my dad is a white man. He has a disability. So he also has been basically preaching about injustice all his life. Mm-hmm. So I have my two parents, which probably were my first role models, so exemplified with their own being how the world is not just and fair and how people are treated differently. And so that kind of voice of like bringing more justice, having reconciliation between different classes and all these things, I think it's just something I grew up with and I was with from an early age. And then now when I write my own pieces, when I do my own productions or my own films, I realize those are the topics that interest me. Mm-hmm. You know, it's mm-hmm. really hard for me. It's so interesting. It's really hard for me to create a movie that is so-called light, you know, that's like pure entertainment, which is totally justified. But it's really hard for me. It's also hard for me. It has always been, even in theater school, to play a role whose only problem is that she didn't get the lover she wanted to, you know? I'm like, that's your only problem, girl. Like in this, like, yeah. I like in this whole, you know, Shakespeare comedies or whatever, where they're like this young girl. So like, but I'm in love with this guy, but this guy's in love with that. I was always like, can we like add another layer here? You know? So it's really interesting. So I'm saying, whatever I did before is still part of my life right now. And I'm bringing that in almost into every role, almost into everything I produce, everything I do. It's somehow political, not because I make it political necessarily, but just because of the person I am and of what I experience in my life.
Right. Well, it seems like your life has been political just by being.
Yeah.
Now you're advocating quite strongly for more representation of Black people in roles. You're just advocating for Black artists. Like you said, you're in an English-speaking country now. You're a Black woman with a German accent. Has there ever been a time where you've tried to shy away from that? And I guess, you know, it's so hard to, you know, when things are such a part of your person, you know, they come out and they have to come out. And what I see you're doing is that you're just being fully honest and fully vulnerable with who you are. And that's part of your advocacy and your activism. But I'm just wondering, like, was there a time where you felt like as an actor, you had to shy away from what you were and put yourself into a box?
Shy away. How do you mean? Can you explain it further? Like, well, give me an example.
You mentioned how, you know, you're trying so hard to minimize your German accent for the American audience. And, you know, and women are put into casting boxes, you know, and they, you know, we're supposed to tick a certain, you know, a certain box and like what are casting ranges and, you know, pigeonholed in certain ways. And I'm just wondering, like, you being a Black woman in a predominantly colonial white American accented area, like, has it become a part of your sort of quote unquote fight in a way?
Oh, okay. I think I get it now. I think, first of all, I have to say coming to Canada and starting to act in English was very humbling, very humbling. I'm the kind of person. Yeah. 2 points that I can maybe mention about that is one thing is that I remember when I saw people on big stages in Germany and they had an accent, I was like, why are there, like in my head, why are there people on stage who speak with an accent? You know, like this is not like
what they have.
It's like mostly I think I was irritated if like some white people from Norway or Sweden were like on the big stages in like a German production. I'm like, this is not right, man. Like I'm German. Apparently I'm not white enough to play in these ensembles, but I speak German pretty well. Like, and I can do like, you know, very complicated sentence structures or whatever. And so I was like, that really bothered me. And also because I think I worked so hard that my that I can do any text in German. Give me any text and I can do it. My cold reading skills are like on point. So you can just imagine how it was coming here. I was like, I had to cold read in an audition and I felt like I like almost stuttered, you know, like I'm messed up completely. And people were really gracious with me always. And then there's French. Let's not even start with French. I even did French in auditions. I don't know what I was thinking. But actors need a lot of confidence, I guess. But like I think that was really humbling, speaking in my second language on stage, rehearsals, cold readings, where I always felt I felt really terrible. I felt like I was a beginner actor. And I felt very small because I got the opportunity to play and perform with great actresses like yourself, with wonderful artists. And I thought, shoot, man, like what they see and what they hear, I don't know if they realize it's my second language. Sometimes I said it and it also felt weird because it felt like an excuse. But yeah, I definitely don't feel as strong and confident as I do in German. That's one thing that was really humbling. Do I feel that I'm in a certain box or something? Yeah, most certainly, because here's the thing. My agent, especially my agent in Montreal, who I've been working with the longest, he... which is also your agent, as you know.
Yeah. Shout out to Mark.
Shout out to Mark. You're amazing.
We love Mark.
We do.
I feel like I need a little appreciation moment in each podcast.
Well, what can we say? Like, he's the best agent.
Times on this podcast, just through me and as someone else gushing over him.
He's the best agent, but he also has the best actors. What can we say?
Oh, there you go.
So now I lost my point.
Were talking to Mark.
Yeah. So Mark got me a few auditions also when they were looking precisely for Germans. And I just never booked it. I also didn't get a callback. Now that could be for different reasons, but I'm just wondering how many German speaking, like mother tongue German speaking actors in my age range are there, you know? And yeah, maybe it has nothing to do with that. I don't know. But I'm just wondering, I would love to know if those parts went to German speakers or not. Or if it possibly has something to do with that an American show or a German show doesn't necessarily picture a black woman as a German. You know, and I think this is what I wish for, is that people are bold, you know, and it's not even that bold because there are thousands. I know thousands of black Germans, you know, and we need to understand that black people, Asian people live everywhere, you know, and we all know that. So I don't know why it's so hard for us to put that on the screens. So I don't understand why I'm not booking German roles, and I'm also not booking American roles. Well, not much. And that because of my accent, or I'm only seen for certain roles because of my accent or whatever not. And I think it's a huge problem in the film industry, because it's just not the truth. You know, there are Black or Asian Germans or from all over the world, everywhere, you know, in the USA.
Yeah, it's like not a big reflection of reality. And even like, you know, people with disabilities, like it's just, there's a complete lack of representation across the board in film. And it doesn't make it very enticing to watch. Like, I mean, even as a white person, I'm kind of sick of seeing, you know, like I'm sick of seeing white people with the same freaking problems on screen all the time.
It's just more interesting to hear people with different accents or seeing more diversity in general on screen. It's more intellectually demanding. It's more challenging. It's what we need in the world. And it's also more healing, because is what will help us. You know, if we celebrate diversity in each of us, that will bring humanity so much forward. Why are we using it as a criteria to take us apart or to exclude people? Why are we not seeing the huge value in it and being like, yes, that we need Black people on screen that speak Chinese, you know? Yeah. Like, we need that. So we're like, oh my gosh, I never thought about that, you know? Mm-hmm. And that helps our mind to be more open, to be more embracing. And I think, yeah, that's the only way forward. And I think that's why I'm doing all the initiatives that I'm doing. That's why I'm speaking up. That's why I'm giving interviews. That's why I don't want to say anything about this and only do my acting thing, which I understand if people decide that. But I think we need to voice that even more till the last person got it.
That's interesting what you say about healing, because I've definitely noticed when I see better representation, and I'll just take an example of something, like let's say like different body sizes or different, you know, just differently shaped bodies or more interesting varied faces. Had I seen that as a little girl hoping to become an actor, I feel like my brain neural pathways would have gone in a different direction. And now I have to talk myself out of, you know, off of the ledge, you know, off of the mental ledge sometimes, how various roles have panned out the way that they have. And I do find it very healing being able to write, to create my own things and just be fully upfront with who I am, what I look like, and how I want to be represented and who I want to cast in what I'm creating. So I think that like that healing point is just extremely important when it comes to representation and, you know, and what we see in our culture. Do you find at this point that you've felt the same way about the healing? Like, have you healed aspects of yourself that just weren't available to you when you were younger, or not even younger, even just like a few years ago? Like,
I think I started healing the moment when, as a 19-year-old, I stepped onto the African continent. Mm. And for the first time, I wasn't a minority in my life. Mm. And I didn't realize and reflect all of that in that moment. It took a while till I realized what was happening. But for the first time in my life, I was one of many people around me. And I was just one of them. And that was an experience I never made before, but I never realized it was never an issue. It was an issue, but I didn't reflect on it. It took a while, right, to realize what was going on, because that's what's happening to all of us, that our environment shapes us, but we don't necessarily know what's going on, especially as teenager and as children. You know, what you just mentioned, different body shapes. Just imagine all this time when we were like second guessing ourselves and spending so much time and effort in fitting in and having a certain body and and looking good. Exactly. And I wouldn't be surprised if it's like a lifetime journey of recovering because, you know, it's like not over. Yeah. And so it's totally healing. And I think the healing path has started. And even, you know, for me, seeing representation on screen or on stage is healing every time. Every time I see a diverse cast, I see different ages, I see people of disabilities, I see people, just queer people, just really different representation. And even sometimes there are people represented I have never thought of, I have to admit. And I'm like, this is good. I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm healing. This is what I believe not only I need, I think everybody needs this. And that is something, it's on stage, it's on screen, but it has to go to every facet of our society. You know, we both teach yoga. You know what it, like the whole yoga industry, you know, needs to still realize that, especially the Western yoga industry. And then there's no section in my life where I'm involved in, you know, we could go into education, you know, look at the books, the school books of our children. What are they playing with in daycare? You know how excited I get if I see that my little one, like they take pictures at the daycare. There's an app now. It's crazy. Anyway, so I get these pictures and I see him playing with this little guy in a wheelchair and the other person, Playmobil, or I don't know what it is a little black person. And I'm like,
the toys that they're playing with.
Yeah. And I'm like, I never had that. All the dolls, all the toys I played with was all white. You know, the color that I colored things in was called skin color in German, but it was white. Like it's like a beige tone, you know?
Right.
And I'm
color.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So it's things like that that I think are changing, and that gives me hope. That I find healing. I that gives me hope that my children are growing up with just a different reality, and if I can do my part to it, that's great. But I think it starts very early in life, you know, so that already what I see in my children, like just gender normatives and stuff like that, you have to start so early to educate them with what is possible out there, and so they are aware of more than just whatever society says the norm is. But it's possible, and I think if people agree to it, there's a huge healing path ahead of them. Yeah.
My little side story, my stepdaughter turned 4 not long ago, and she had like an educator, an éducatrice at her daycare that gave her a Barbie for her birthday. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And I had to like both my partner and I were like, she's an educator at a garderie in 2020. And this is actually happening. And she and, you know, my stepdaughter loved it. She was like brushing the Barbie's hair. And I was like, well, I don't want to like take away this like fun doll that she has that she's really enjoying. But I definitely had to have a conversation with her and be like, basically, it was a conversation that like Barbies are not usually allowed in this household, especially in 2020. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I had a moment where I kind of had to like bite my tongue a few times. But yeah, that was really interesting.
Yeah, well, on the Barbie note, just a little anecdote. A few years back, maybe 2 or 3 years back, it was, I guess, the Barbie face. Yeah, it was around that age, maybe 5. He was invited to birthday parties quite a bit. And when it was girls, he didn't know too well. He's like, let's get her a Barbie. And I was like, I asked like 3 or 5 times, are you sure? And then when he said yes, then I said, okay, if you want to give her a Barbie, we'll get her a Barbie. But I'm only getting her a certain Barbie. So then I looked, poor boy, he ran with me through so many stores till I found that black Barbie with a fro. And because a lot of stores don't have them on demand. And so he was at some point, he's like, mommy, why does it always have to be a black Barbie? And I was like, I'm pretty certain that this friend, whatever her name is, doesn't have one yet. and so I think he doesn't really get why I was so, you know, it took so many extra miles to get this black Barbie. But I hope that one day he will realize what I was doing, you know.
Yeah, but still, that's like, isn't that crazy that you had to run around various toy shops to find a black Barbie too? I mean, like, talk about lack of diversity and representation. And like you say, in all realms, like, you know, like you said, there's not there is not a part in your life where this doesn't matter.
Exactly.
And where there's faults in it.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. So Benita, I want to talk about Yell It. You started Yell It during the pandemic.
Yes.
Tell us about Yell It. And is this something that was sort of an inspiration that sprung from being in the pandemic, or has it been something that you've been thinking about for a long time?
No, I didn't think about that for a long time at all. Actually, I come up with new projects and my husband is like, great. And
another one.
And I feel like I feel him, you know, I should stop. We talked about that earlier.
No, but you shouldn't stop.
Yeah, I shouldn't stop. But, you know, there's only 24 hours, so I have to watch it sometimes. But anyway, I'm not sorry at all about Yell It. So Yell It is a show that is going to turn into a podcast as well before too long, I hope. But it right now it's a web show. It's online on YouTube, on Instagram, IGTV, and on Facebook. And it's artists in conversation about their art. Most of them are performing artists, and they are either German or Canadian. And it started actually the day after Blackout Tuesday. So Blackout Tuesday happened, I don't know if you're all familiar, after George Floyd, the week after George Floyd, there was this initiative that was happening on Instagram where people asked to put a black square to kind of mute the internet for one day and just let us all think about the crime that is happening against black people.
Yeah, and I think it was initiated by the music industry.
Exactly. I think it was two black women from the music industry. And what I saw and what really frustrated me is that I saw a lot of black people joining in and also posting black squares. And a few colleagues and I was like, what is going on? We've already been muted. And now we're muting even in these times. And there's nothing wrong with showing solidarity to what's going on in the States. But at the same time, I felt, when are we starting to speak up? When are we getting louder? When is there going to be, like, in a way, a step back for the world to hear us? You know, and to give space and place for what we have to say, because as artists, every artist that is still about to establish themselves is struggling. There's no question about it. But the way we live in, the structural racism that's happening all over the world makes it even harder for people of color, and especially black people, to move forward. And so I was so frustrated on that, on Blackout Tuesday. And so I was like, okay, we have to start something to amplify our voices. And then I even spoke to, I'm part of a big group. It's called Black Filmmakers Germany, Switzerland, Austria. We're over 500 members, and I'm one of the administrators. And
what
of that
group,
Black Filmmakers Germany. Okay. And it's a growing group. We're all from the film industry, and I'm one of the people holding it together, or if you so want. And I spoke to them and I said, Blackout Tuesday, that we can't just be silent. Let's all do something. Let's be loud right now. If they are all listening, then we have to say something and not be silent. And so they said, okay, yeah, that's true. Do you have an idea? Whatever. And then the next morning I woke up with the idea for Yell It, where I interview and talk similar to you talking to women. I'll talk to Black artists about their art, because that's the other thing that's happening. When we are invited as guests in TV shows, when I'm asked for interviews in print media or whatever, most of the time it's always connected to me talking about racism and diversity and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. But we are also artists, right? Like, the activism is just an outcome to the structural injustice, you know?
Right.
And
yeah.
When that takes over, when I'm giving more interviews about that instead of talking about my art, like the shows that I'm creating, the shows that I'm involved, the productions that I'm making, then something is weird, right? Because that's my job and I want to work in that field. Activism, most of the time I don't even get paid for it, but that's also just a side outcome. It's not what I want to do mainly. There are activists out there that are experts and trained and who do that for a living, but that's actually not me. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I was like, let's shift it and bring it back to the art, and also have a Black person talking to a Black person, because we haven't seen that enough.
Yeah.
You know?
Word.
And and that's a different conversation most of the time, because certain things I would never ask because they are so clear. And I thought it's interesting to see that and to observe that dynamic. And because I often say, what do you have in your hands? When people are like, what can I do? What can I do? Just look what's in front of you. Don't try to like invent a whole world that's not realistic. I have access to so many artists that I've met on my path, or that I'm constantly meeting, or I know artists who know other artists. So it's easy for me to connect with certain people and ask them to join me for a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought that is not hard to ask them to be part of this. And I thought it would be interesting, and it would maybe also create a global network, which is already happening, which is so exciting, because there are Canadian artists watching it and getting to know German Black artists, and not just Black artists. It's like, obviously, the audience, everyone who wants can watch it. And then new productions, international productions, can come into existence, and also vice versa. I feel like in Germany, you know a lot of Black American artists, but you don't know many Canadian artists, you know? Like, even, I guess, if I would ask any person on the street, who's your favorite Black Canadian actor? I don't know how many people would be able to answer. And that's an issue, I think. Even for Canada, I'm realizing to celebrate themselves, you know? Celebrate their national treasures, if you so want. So I don't know that
we don't just have Celine Dion. Like, come
on. Exactly. Up. You have more than
Brian Adams.
Yeah, or Michael Bublé, right? Is he?
Yeah. Shania, Justin Bieber, you know.
It's so weird. And it's all people who made it in the States, and then they are recognized here.
Yeah.
I'm like, what's wrong with that picture? Why can't we have people who are really successful here in Canada, you know, being the heroes or the role models or whatever? And then that's just, most of the people we just mentioned, or all of them, were white, right? And then now talking about Black people, you know, and I'm just bringing in the people that I got in touch with mostly. And so and they are incredible people, not just on screen, but also off screen. So that's how I look for the people that I bring on. I think they are not only great role models because they're great in what they do, but also I feel like they have a huge heart for the community.
That's so important. Like, just, you know, because you can be the most amazing artist and be a fucking asshole in your life. And then I'm like, well, then how did, like, does that mean you were an asshole on your way to the top? Like, I'm not interested in that. Like,
exactly.
I want to know that the person is fully formed and great. You know,
because I don't have any interest in lifting somebody up who's not lifting others up.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. Amen.
And the people who are on the show are people who have inspired me. And I believe many others. And I'm really excited about responses. Every week I get some responses from people who are like, oh, I finally got down to watch the latest episodes, or I just binged watched and caught up. And it's so nice, especially when people write like, actually, I just wanted to see that one show with this artist that I was interested in getting to know better. But then I liked it so much and I watched another one. And I love when Germans start watching Canadians and Canadians watch German, because it's all subtitles in the same language to make it accessible, and then in the other language. And I just hope that happens more often, you know, that people get inspired and get to know more artists in and outside of the country. Yeah.
So having said that, is there an artist at the moment that you want to give a shout out to, or someone that you're following, that's up and coming, or is there anyone that you want to just mention?
Well, all of them are great. So check all of them. Yell it, yes. And the recent one, episode number 10, is very interesting because it's actually a woman that has an academic background like me, Dr. Natasha A. Kelly. And she talks about her intersection between academics and arts. And she published 6 books or 7 books already. She is working on her 3rd theater show. And it's so interesting. Her latest book is in English and German, so it's really cool. It's about Afrofuturism.
Oh, cool.
And it's so exciting because what she does is she studied and is researching in post-colonial studies, and she brings in old stories, or like connects the colonial past and like reappropriates it. And it's really, really interesting. And she, because she's perfectly bilingual, is also the first German artist that is speaking in English. So it's also interesting. So you don't even have to read subtitles. So that's the latest show that's coming out this week. And so definitely watch it.
That's super cool. Well, it sounds like you're really leading the way in that sense. Really quickly, what are you working on at the moment besides being on the board of the filmmaker board, and besides doing Yell It? What are you creating at the moment? What's going on? What are you working on?
All right. So it's three shows, so I'm going to be really brief. So I'm part of an artist collective in Berlin called Label Noir. It's a Black artist collective. And we will, I'm part of the artistic director committee. It's a collective, so it's a bit different work. For a new show, which is called Emmett Till, Deep in My Heart. And it was supposed to premiere in January, but due to Rona, we have to postpone it. So it will be, if that all works out, fingers crossed, staged in June. So right now we are auditioning the last roles, the last parts. We have an incredible director, and we will start rehearsing, well, basically now, like on Zoom, but like the proper in-person rehearsals will continue next year. So that's one project.
And that'll be in Germany.
That will be staged in Germany at the HAU, Hebel am Ufer, which is a pretty famous theater in Berlin. And hopefully it will be staged in other places and countries too. So to all the theater directors who are interested, shout out to me. And we're happy in the future when traveling is possible to bring it to other theaters as well. So that's one show. I'm working on the other thing is that I'm working on a feature film about two Afro-German sisters in the Second World War. So it's wow. a period piece. I've been working on this film for 4 years.
Wow. And are you, when you're working on it, you're what stage are you at? Are you writing? Are you in the pre-prod?
It's me and my partner. It's based on a true story. So we have been shooting interviews with people who were survivor of the true family and people who were experts on the Second World War, and especially when it comes to Black people in the Second World War. Mm-hmm. We have been researching ourselves the time, and we've been writing an exposé. And then mm-hmm. we have been pitching it to a lot of amazing production companies, which is really exciting. And now we came to a point where we realized we will not write the whole script in order for it to be really successful. And because we don't have the time, because we're both actors. So mm-hmm. we're too busy. So there are always phases where we had to leave it for like a month or two because there was too much going on in our lives. And so now the last 2 months, we had castings with authors. And that was really an exciting process to be on the other side and holding auditions. And so we're nailing it down to the author we're going to work with because everyone is interested in something that also hasn't been screened yet. And so I think very soon we'll start writing the screenplay.
Wow, and then, that's so cool.
Yeah, like we hope to be able to pitch the whole package early next year, like in maybe February, March. That's the plan. And the last thing is a theater show that I'm working on with a lot of Montreal artists in partnership with the Mai. And I've been on that for a year now too as well. And that is taking shape and form. We started workshopping it online. So basically every 2 weeks we meet online on Zoom, and we are digging deep into ancestral research together with Diane Roberts. Mm-hmm. And that is quite incredible. This project is called Diaspora Kids, and we are five artists who are researching our ancestry, or in other words, one ancestor that we chose. And with that ancestral knowledge and new and old artistic practicing, we are bringing a production to life.
I just want to give you a big round of applause. Ovation. That sounds pretty mad and wonderful, and I can't wait to see how it all comes to fruition, Benita. How exciting.
Yes.
I want to ask you one last question. Right now, what's your favorite thing about being a woman?
I think my favorite thing about being a woman is I feel like I can do it all. I feel like there is nothing I cannot do. You know, like we bear children, we bleed, we are loud, but we're also silent and soft and quiet and have a lot of energy. But I personally don't have a problem with admitting my shortcomings. And I think there's so much power in the soft tones and the really loud noises, you know, and I love that there is that variety within myself, and there is a really annoying and loud rebellious voice in me, and then there is this meditative soft-spoken yoga teacher in me, you know, and all those opposites and all these kind of sometimes even conflicting feelings and expressions, the very diplomatic me and the very emotional, conflicting and very crazy actor me, it's all fine. It's all good. It's all great. And it all has its own right to exist. And I love that.
Well, thank you for bringing that to the table, to the mic. Thanks for bringing it to the mic today, Vanita. I've loved this conversation. It's been really inspiring, and you know, you dropped a what I like, faithful to the Her Story podcast. You've dropped a few like wisdom bombs in there. And I hope that people listening to this will resonate with them. I'm sure they will, because I definitely have. So thank you so much for your contribution to your art and committing to it, and for reminding us that it's not all, you know, it's, you can have it all and it's not all easy, but there's a lot of color in that, and it's worthwhile, it seems like.
Yes, definitely. Thank you so much, Kathleen, for having me and for doing this podcast. I now know the amount of work that goes into it. So kudos to you for keeping going, for bringing in interesting voices. I really appreciate that. And I think you really, really, really are a blessing to your environment by voicing those incredible women that are around you.
Thank you.
Thanks again so much for being here with us. Merci beaucoup. If you like this podcast, don't forget to rate, review, star, subscribe, share with a friend. See you next time on the Her Story podcast.